Today's unbelievable guest on Entrepreneurs Worldwide. Wow, does he have a story. You start a spirits brand that actually you know very little about. Are you mad?
I think so.
He arrived in Scotland with only £500 in his pocket from India.
I had a very high risk appetite because there was nothing to fall back on. I was unhappy, I was getting obese, and I was just not looking after myself because I wasn't in the state of mind I wanted to be in, and I had to find a purpose.
He then goes on to get an unbelievable banking job and becomes a huge success at it, working for BlackRock.
I was on a £3,000 per day rate contract.
Okay, every reason to stay.
Every single reason to stay.
Nish decides to jack it all in and fulfill his dream, and that is to create an international spirits brand, Rutland Square Spirits. How much money did you need to get it off the ground?
A good brand?
Yeah.
At least 10 million.
Do you really?
Minimum. We are in 20 odd airports. We are going into 50 more airports by end of this year.
It has now had a valuation of way over £30 million.
I have been offered £50 million for the brand. I've rejected
already?
It. Yeah.
Welcome, Nish Sharma, to Entrepreneurs Worldwide.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Well, we're excited to have you. I mean, we've got so much to tuck into. How on earth did you have a heart attack at 35 years old?
I don't know how, but the leading factors were stress, chaos, uncertainty. I was 140 kilos big. Overly obese, going through the process of building a startup with no capital into a sector which is billionaire's bad boy play, where you need to have lots of money to do it. And ignorance was bliss, and that led to it.
What gave you the idea of a spirits brand?
The major factor was the family. My great-grandfather, who had an itchy foot, he migrated from the northwest part of India to the extreme northeast. This is back then when you couldn't just jump on a plane and fly out. So he walked, he took bullock carts, he took a steam train, and then he ended up from the most extreme western part of India to the most extreme eastern part of India, looking for an opportunity because he could speak English.
Wow.
And then he ended up working for an English lord who owned a tea estate where he was a translator for the labor who couldn't speak English. And he met a Scottish officer who was also working in the British Army during British India era. And they started an illegal operation of blending spirits to as a side hustle. So alcohol was in my blood.
Brilliant. Yes, certainly was. So you ended up coming over to the UK, what age?
19.
19.
I just finished my school and I took a flight out.
Wow.
Now, your father gives you £500. What were you doing coming over here? Did you know what you were coming for? Did you have a dream to come here? Did you have family here?
I had no idea. I think I was going through a phase.
Quite a phase.
It was a phase, yes. I wasn't doing much in India and I couldn't see myself building a career in my dad's business. He had a very basic... good enough business for a family of four, two children and a partner and himself. And I wasn't interested in what he was doing. It was a great thing for him. It just wasn't for me. And I wanted to do something exciting.
Your first job was what, pot washing?
How on earth do you go from pot washing to get a job at BlackRock?
I always had this thing about if it cannot be done, I must do it. My then girlfriend, now wife, she was in Scottish Widows Investment Partnership and she has a law degree and she has a psychology degree. And she said, you need to have a degree to get into banking. And that was my hook that I can somehow find my way into banking.
So what do you major in?
So I didn't went to uni. I dropped out of uni.
Okay.
I went to college.
Yep.
I did my higher national certificate and diploma. I went to uni. I was an international student. I had to pay £16,000 annually as my fees myself. So I couldn't figure myself
out. That's a lot of pots.
It was. And the pots weren't enough to pay for the fees. So I decided to drop out. Just before this podcast started, I made a comment about asking my tutor, then very nice guy, that how many businesses have you set up? He said none. So I walked away. I saved myself £16,000 a year.
A company like BlackRock, which is one of the most famous famous
biggest bank asset manager in the world.
Absolutely huge.
Yes.
I'm amazed you were qualified enough to get a job like that.
Started from the bottom.
Right. Talk us through that.
So before I did BlackRock, I ventured into selling Sheila's Wheels, car insurance. I left, but I had some call center experience that helped me get a job into Aegon as insurance, again, in call center. I would always had this hook, what did my manager do that puts him in that position? And I would learn through Google about his job. I will read his CV and I will upskill myself, prepare myself for interviews. And I keep giving interviews until I would be successful. And this is how I scaled. So I went from Aegon to Lloyds to Scottish Widows to every single bank
HSBC,
I could.
HSBC.
Everything. From back office to the middle office.
And then you ended up at BlackRock.
Yes.
What was your title there? What was your role?
So I started as an associate and then I ended up my career as a VP, Vice President.
Fantastic.
And how long did that take?
4 years. I would look for jobs above my pay grade and I'll somehow convince the interviewer that I'm good for this job.
So what do you think it was about you that they identified and saw such potential? Because 4 years is very fast.
It was. It was fast and I think I always had the skill. I have been a people's person and I can always look for an opportunity and I would convince them that give it a shot. If I don't perform, put me back in my seat.
Yeah, you're like 100% money back. Guarantee.
Do you know, we had an entrepreneur on last week who he was saying that his old boss, I think it was George Kukas, all he really wanted to hear was, what do I have to do to get this job?
Yeah.
That floors a lot of employers. And I bet you've taken that all the way through your business.
I don't know about gift, but there's something I believe in, and I strongly believe in this, that if you can put your mind into something and you really believe into this piece of work that you want to do, you put your heart and soul out. Because as human beings, you know, we are born with no training and we somehow learn to walk.
100%. Yeah. So you're obviously earning decent money now. At this point.
What are you earning at this point?
I was on a £3,000 per day rate contract.
Okay. Every reason to stay?
Every single reason to stay.
So this is what blows us away. Which is
your
what
mother
makes
and
you,
father must have strangled which you. Is,
everybody was ready to strangle me.
Yeah.
You've got a lifetime in banking and BlackRock. And actually, God knows where you might have gone if you'd have stayed. But you decide to jack it all in, which is why we're called Entrepreneurs Worldwide. You are a true entrepreneur. You're exactly what we love on this show. You start a spirits brand that actually you know very little about. Are you mad?
I think so. I think ignorance is bliss.
Yes.
You know, what can I say? Something my grandfather used to say, until you dive in the water, you don't know what skills you have. Either you drown and die or you somehow find a way to swim to the shore.
So would you describe yourself as a man that has quite a high risk profile?
I would say now I have a moderate risk profile. Earlier, I had a very high risk appetite because there was nothing to fall back on. I came to this country with 500, which I returned back, adding 500 to my dad back because he was very clear, I'm giving you the last of money I can afford to pay you. And there's don't expect any money from me. And that did hurt me a little. And I think I'm the only boy. My sister is 12 years younger than me.
Well, he gave you what he had, or do you think he had a little bit more?
Well, he could have scooped a little bit more, but it was my decision and he wasn't with me on this decision. He said, you know, you are deciding to leave your family behind and going to do something that you want to do. So he thought it was a bit of a brash decision. So he wanted me to survive through my decision.
Mm. So you set up Rutland Square Spirits.
Yes. It didn't start as a drinks brand. It started as multiple failures. Rutland Square, before it became Rutland Square, it was an attempt to do whatever I could because I was unhappy in what I was doing. Money was great. And I think comes a point in your life when you make a lot of money, decent amount of money, especially when you come from where I have come from and you're driving the dream car you wanted to drive. You're living the lifestyle you wanted to live. You know, you're
but if you're not fulfilled inside, that hole just gets wider.
I was depressed. I was unhappy. I was getting obese and I was just not looking after myself because I wasn't in the state of mind I wanted to be in. And I had to find a purpose. And for me, that purpose went through multiple failures. Even till date. Every day I go through failures.
It's the only way through is to learn.
But what are you saying? You had other companies before the drinks brand?
So I started a leather business company, importing bespoke shoes from Spain and selling them. That failed. I had a film production company because I started filmmaking. That failed. Then I had a few other bits and bobs selling e-commerce.
And were you
stuff.
Just living on the money you'd saved?
Yeah. You know, it was the money I was making. And of course, my partners was working as well. So we had a comfortable ecosystem. I could take risks.
But the drinks brand is the big ticket item, right? It's now valued at over 30 million.
Yeah.
I want to know how you've got that to where that is today.
So I had this hook to do something of my own. I was going through this phase of I was transpiring into something that I didn't want it to be. And in this phase, my grandmother passes away. I was very close to my grandmother. My mom was postnatal after she had me. She was just a 19-year-old when she conceived me. She didn't know how to look after a baby. So technically, I was raised by my grandmother. So when you lose an anchor in your life, you almost lose everything. And that's where it all happened. I was in India for 2 weeks, you know, going through the process of the death, the grief. And my grandfather and I found solace. We started drinking together and we started chatting together. For those 2 weeks, we had nothing better to do other than sit down and have a chat and remember her. This is where I learned about how my great-grandfather started and how alcohol came to our life and how I felt, okay, if he could make it into alcohol, I live in the Mecca of Spirits, which is Scotland. Why should I not start an alcohol journey?
Sure.
So I came back with the dream to build the best whiskey distillery a man could, but whiskey humbled me. You need millions and millions of pounds, which I never had. Whatever pot of money I had, I thought I had millions, which wasn't there. And I had to start with gin. So gin happened by force. It wasn't something I intend to do because I couldn't afford to do whiskey.
How do you know how to do that? And where do you make it?
I have ADHD. So for me, anything I do, it has to be in a certain way. Otherwise, I feel there's something missing. And obsession of building or creating something that has meaning was the foundation. So I really wanted to tell my story rather than just create a bottle of gin, because there are thousands of gins on the shelf.
Of course.
Why would anybody
pick
up a bottle?
Where was your first bottle created?
In Edinburgh.
In a kitchen?
No, it was done professionally because it's alcohol. It cannot be done in a kitchen. The idea was conceived in my home office in a small box room. We were in COVID period and, you know, we were just, the branding was done in my office. But then I had 100 grand in my pocket, which I thought a lot of money, and I burnt it all on a brand agency. And then I had no money to buy stock. So this is how it started, because I wanted to make it the best looking gin that a man can produce, because people buy from eyes first before they even put liquid.
Would you say by your continued endeavors and belief in yourself and never ever giving up that that actually creates opportunity?
Yes.
And it creates a vertical learning?
Absolutely.
You started this in COVID. How have you scaled that so quickly?
It is a good gin, but not just because it's my gin. I have poured my heart, soul and my life into it.
Can you tell us what makes a good gin taste?
Any good base spirit, because the base needs to be strong like a house. The foundation has to be strong, otherwise it collapses. So we used the top tier neutral grain spirit that we can find in Scotland. And my master distiller, Matt, who's an absolute genius in what he does, he runs a company. We white label our gin, so we don't have a distillery of our own. But Matt was very clear in the direction I was going. I came up with a recipe that I like. And I thought it needs to be a story in a bottle rather than a product in a bottle. I was more led by story because I come from that creative background.
Well, we've had many entrepreneurs on this show that say it's not so much these days about the product. It needs to be good, mm-hmm. but it's about the storytelling.
Yes. As I said, people buy from eyes first and then they put liquids to lip. The liquid has to back up, otherwise
sure.
they will never repeat. And if the repeat doesn't happen, you die.
Sure.
So did you own the manufacturing?
I own the IP, which is the
right.
recipe, the brand, the name, the glass.
Often the approach would be to dominate and control everything, so the errors are less.
Manufacturing is a more cash intensive exercise because you have to set up shop. You need to buy equipments before even you can start producing. And then even if you're producing, then you need to pour money to sell.
Right.
Owning an IP is not as cash intensive. Your cash is tied up on your stock, your infrastructure, your glass. But owning a manufacturing is a higher risk.
How much money did you need to get it off the ground?
A good brand?
Yeah.
At least 10 million.
Do you really?
Minimum.
Wow.
Yeah.
What's the gin called?
Rutland Square Dry Spice Scottish Gin.
Ah, right. So that's not, it's, but Rutland Square, I thought, was the umbrella of the...
Rutland Square became the company, but we made it Rutland Square, so it resonates. We didn't want it to do...
Say that again, it's Rutland Square...
Chai Spiced Scottish Gin.
Yeah, it's got Indian spices in it, doesn't it?
Yes.
Which makes it's
a story.
Very unusual, yeah.
It's an immigrant story.
Yeah, you know, it's a beautiful bottle.
Thank you.
How did you come up with the bottle idea? Because that's hard.
I will give the credit to the design agency Contagious. I hired them. They were the topmost design agency from Edinburgh, Leith, and companies like Diageo would hire them to do a design. So I poured in every single penny I ever owned into creating the bottle.
I was about to say, how much did that cost?
$100,000.
Oh, God.
Where did you think that you were going to start selling it? And who went out on the road and sold it?
Ignorance is bliss. I thought the day I will launch, people will line up to buy my gin. Never happened.
No. Brilliant.
You know, you have this mad idea. I think that's...
I think that's sane, because I think a lot of entrepreneurship is actually just about jumping off a cliff and figuring it out before you hit the ground.
Well when you jump, you don't think in that direction.
No.
You just jump because you have nothing to do.
To lose.
You know, and especially people with ADHD, they are almost bored of living and they try to do crazy stuff which almost kills them on a daily basis.
Do you take any medication for
No.
that?
Please don't
I
take medication.
I see this as my superpower. I would not.
Yeah,
I tried. It slows me down and it kills my creativity.
Yeah.
I have learned to control it, but it works best.
So fast forward to now, you've got a 30 million valuation minimum.
Yeah.
30 million valuation. How many bottles a week, month, year, or are you selling, and where are you selling them?
So we are selling everywhere. We are selling on Amazon. We are selling on Master of Malls. We are selling on the Whiskey Exchange. We are selling on every single platform that's out there in the UK. We are selling directly from our website, which generates most of the
in all the pubs and the bars? And
not
the
there
hotels.
Yet. We are slowly getting there. It's a very cash intensive exercise. Even to get a shelf on the bar comes with a cost.
Yes.
So we pour that money into marketing.
Do you know what it is? Is Richard only drinks Skinny Bitches.
Ah, very nice.
Seriously. That
Beautiful.
Is him, vodka, lime and soda. So that's why
but
he knows
I do love
zero
I won't
gin,
mention,
but I know
I
d- about
I
it.
Won't mention it, but I do love a gin and tonic as well, but there is a particular
gin
brand.
Is the most healthiest drink you can drink.
Is it really?
It
More
is.
Than vodka?
Yes. Well, vodka is just potatoes, so there is some level of starch in it. If you're drinking a potato vodka, or if you're even drinking a grain vodka, it has grain. Anything that goes through the process of fructose and turning into sugar is not clean.
How did you sell your first bottle?
I went to shops selling one bottle at a time. Sometimes I would say, keep a bottle. If it sells, then pay me. So high risk, high rewards. I did that for almost 2 years. I would go to markets. I would go to farmers markets and I would set up shop early in the morning and then sell till 10 p.m.
Only way to do it.
Did that. I saw, like, literally my entire inventory would be in my van.
Yeah.
I would have my whole year's stock would be just sitting in my van, and I would go out every single day like a crazy salesman, and I would just show up. People will shoo me away and I'll still show up like that hungry dog who's sitting outside for a piece of bread. And just never gave up. And today we are a team of 25. We are selling in Canada, 690 outlets in LCBO. We are in Japan, GCC, Qatar, Doha, Bahrain, Abu Dhabi and Dubai. We are via MMI. We are in 20 odd airports. We are going into 50 more airports by end of this year. We are in Hong Kong. We are going into Singapore,
How
Malaysia.
How have you scaled it that quickly? Do you get involved with distributors over there? Is that how you've done it?
Yes. So most companies, they like to invest the capital they raise into marketing. We did absolutely opposite. If you look into our Instagram social media presence, we are not aesthetic at all. We are just raw, random kids trying to do stuff, because we followed the methodology of having a bottle on the shelf first before even we can market it to get people to the shops. If you're not even on the shops, where are people going to buy it from?
True.
So we build relationship with the companies. So what you see today, 690 outlets, are hundreds of emails sent over 3 years. I've just taken example, Waitrose, Tesco's and Sainsbury's. I have been hammering them for past 4 years. I've still not gotten yes. So maybe next time when I'm on and I say we are available in Waitrose, that 4-year consistency would pay that off.
I think one of the things a lot of people won't realize, unless you've got a retail brand, and I learned very quickly, you're never going to get into a retailer unless they've got to take something off the shelf to get you on.
Yes, and they do make space because we pay for the space as well. We create a small space for ourselves. For them, they're like speed rails. They don't like to see brands sitting there collecting dust because they see their money tied up.
Of course.
So whatever sells, they'll stock.
I have a huge belief in lean is mean, and actually, if you get the right people, how did you find those people?
They're all odd people. I have found them, some from LinkedIn. I have found some through the journey. For example, Selena, perfect example. She was my boss in HSBC. She was the best process mapper I've ever seen in my world.
What is a process map?
Process map is when you're dealing with billion-dollar companies, you have to have a process in place, how this function will take place. So she would use Visio to understand this team member will do this, this task will transpire into this, and this task will transpire into this, and this is how the loop will be closed. So she was perfect in terms of how the functioning would happen. And I always had it in mind. And she took a 60% pay cut to come join me. And she invested £50,000 of her life savings into me. Because
what a lovely story.
She believed in me. And now my biggest hook is I cannot let her fail.
Yeah. Oh yeah, totally.
You know, I can fail myself. I can fail everything. I cannot let her fail.
No.
So my responsibility is far greater than anything else because I can't let her down.
How good a husband are you?
Not a good husband at the moment.
Well, how can you be when you're working like that?
That's the problem.
This is what we hear on...
So we're both divorced and we're both entrepreneurs, serial entrepreneurs.
It's hard. So. It's hard because in a marriage is it's a project in itself.
Yes.
One partner needs something else and you're going through a different phase of your life and you cannot bring your problems home. Even if you want to share, it will scare them off the kind of life an entrepreneur lives. It's scary.
Yeah.
It's so scary that it's a dark hole.
It is.
That,
and it's a roller coaster ride. Yes. And it's unfair for them.
Like people see that 30 million valuation, they think I've got 30 million lying cash in the bank.
Of course
that's not true, right? There are days that, you know.
Well, it's valued on the profit you're making. Right?
Yes, it's on the revenue we are doing. It's on the money we have raised. It's on the stock we hold. It's multiple factors.
Once you get it right, is it a very profitable thing to be involved in? Why?
Margins are high because it's a volume of scale.
Yeah.
It's economy of scale. So the more you sell, the cheaper your product gets on the bottom line.
Where does most of the costs lie?
The most cost is your liquid that you have to produce and pay upfront because we don't get any good credit terms from our suppliers. But we have to give 60, 90 days credit upfront to our buyers because we have to please them. So we are the ones who are taking the cash hit. Now, I don't have any money in the bank where my buyer who owes me £100,000, but that money is not going to come into my bank account for next 90 days. But my supplier who's made my gin wants the money day one before even he releases my stock. So it's always a chicken and egg situation for us.
But the larger you grow, the better the terms you'll get with your supplier,
of course,
right?
Everybody wants to work with the rising sun.
Yeah.
You know, it says the Gulf Stream that demands the value, not the Boeing.
It's a bit like doing this podcast. Mm-hmm. There are loads of gyms, which means plenty of people are buying them. Same with the podcast. Yes, everyone's doing a podcast, but that means a lot of people are more open to listening to them.
Consumers will consume anything that they feel it's right for them. It's about you narrating that story and they buy into your story. So there's room for everything. I would never say that there is enough gin in the market. If you have a story that you want to bring to people, they will buy it.
Your product is full of love, passion, you know, and actually meeting you in person, I see it. You're amazing.
I see it too. I see it. Over the years, you've obviously made mistakes. You've been on the breadline quite a few times. You've had multiple businesses that haven't worked. Share with our viewers and audience what you've learned.
I think the formula is same. I think one thing entrepreneurs and founders forget is cash is king. We have an oversight on cash flow. We go and drive ourselves into scale, but without realizing how quickly it can burn through money. And if you have an oversight on your balance sheet, which I struggle to keep an eye on my balance sheet, so I have a CFO. So I made sure that when I started my journey as a one-man bandwagon, the reason I was failing was because I was trying to do everything. I was the driver, I was the delivery man, and I was the salesperson, and I was the marketing guy. This is not how it should be. The minute you raise capital, or even if you put your own money, hire people. because that people will multiply your effort and hire good people who believe in the vision. If I take Selena as an example, she believed in me and the product that I made. Otherwise, why would somebody take a 60% pay cut, well-paying banking job in HSBC and come work for a startup, which is bound to fail every day?
Have you given shares away to people?
Yeah, I've got an ESOP program. She's a shareholder ESOP. And a director on my company.
I know those, yes. Yeah.
What's that?
So for founding team, because we don't have the capital to give them cash up front to remunerate them for their effort, so what we do is we give them an ESOP plan. Yeah. An ESOP plan gives them a certain amount of guaranteed shares in the company. If certain milestones are met, they get those shares. And then whenever the big funding round is happening, if they want to liquidity event, we can create for them and give them a big paycheck.
Yeah, it's a brilliant way of keeping employees focused and actually valuing them.
Everybody's looking for something in it for them.
Of course.
This is how life is. If you go out and crack a deal, everybody's first focus is what am I going to get out of it?
What's your end goal?
We are going into acquisitions now. I'm setting up my own fund in Abu Dhabi because I'm pooling a lot of capital. We are closing 150 million round this year, and we want to buy distressed assets. The whiskey distillery is going through a shift, and we are identifying key distilleries that we want to acquire, and if we are successful, we will be accumulating.
You've raised
assets.
150 million.
We have raised 50. We got another 100 million committed to us.
What was the structure? Was it
Well, it's a fund structure. It's controlled by a fund manager and an investment committee. So the fund, the money and I are on arm's length. We have a mandate in place. So I put a mandate through that we need this money for XYZ. They go through a vetting process and investors put... So it's like a pot of capital coming from various directions.
So you basically think you can pick up distilleries for a song?
There are many out there.
What are you going to do to turn that around? What's your business model to turn it around?
So I have something, an access to the market, which is the fastest growing market in the world, which is India. And because
Brilliant.
I was born there, it's closing my circle.
Brilliant.
And my family has been into the alcohol. I have the connections on the ground. I have people who know me. I have a billionaire Bollywood actor backing me who's a shareholder in the company. He's got over 20 million followers. He sits on a cash pile of 6 billion he's raised from Blackstone.
Does he ever come to London? Can he come
on
the
pop? He does. He loves it. He's got a house in London.
I was just going to say, Nish, hold it back. I can't believe you didn't tell us straight up. That is, but that's extraordinarily clever because you've gone through the back door. You're basically, you started out by describing whiskey as being such a high bar to entry.
Yeah.
It's extraordinarily clever that you've gone and created a fund to go mop up.
Yeah.
The mistakes it's or brilliant. The cash flow
so
crunch.
Bring efficiency, turn it around. Plug it into the world of or the part of the world which is consuming the most price sensitive market. Reduce your COGS. Plug it into a sensible price.
Create cash
People
flow.
Have this idea of selling premium brands. I'm a premium brand. Your brand's nothing if it doesn't sell.
Yeah.
So it needs to be a strategic premium brand. You can add more premium products.
I was just thinking, it's just racing through my mind that, I love guests like you. We love guests like you. I'll tell you why. Because you start off and think... And he's just, and as the podcast has gone on, he's sung like a canary. I can see how all the jigsaw pieces fit into
place. It comes itself. It's something you don't think about or you don't plan. Sometimes life has a mysterious way of putting you into the right track.
Always.
You just need to start walking. Mm-hmm. The path follows. So it happens organically.
Love that.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Very true.
Now I want you to crow about what you're good at. Why do you think that you've got to where you have in 3 years?
I think what I'm good at is people management.
Yes.
People work with people. People invest in people. There's no business in the world without people. And if you're good with people, you're honest with them, you tell them the truth, you tell them this is my plan. My plan has failed, but I'm going to pivot around. Believe in me, people will come and join your
Nish,
journey.
Maybe reframe that because there's a stat where I think it's three companies every founder builds and fails on before they build the right one.
Well, so again, it comes to people, right?
You have to do that to learn. Let me ask you, what is your sales process?
So our sales process is very complex. The D2C sales process is we run some organic ads on social media that attracts towards the brand. People try it, they like it, they repeat it. And this is how we are surviving. If there was no repeat, I would not be sitting here.
Of course.
So the product is good, it's market fit. People are liking it, they're repeating it. Countries like Canada are ordering it because they love the concept.
Is it price sensitive?
Well, we
the
are...
The gin market. Where are you?
It is.
Where do you sit?
So it depends what you're looking to bring to the table. If you're just looking a London dry gin with nothing in it, gin starts at £16, as low as £12. Gordon's gin, £15. Mm. The product itself is not the challenge, the duties are expensive. You know, my bottle of gin, £9.67 is a duty alone, which I have to pay HMRC first before even I put that bottle out of my warehouse. So it's a very cash intensive exercise. Hence the fund. Because I don't come from money. No. Who's going to back me?
No, and if you're going to grow and scale, you're going to have to think out
of the box.
You
need to have the money, and you can't consistently raise. Yeah. Because your company has 100 shares or 100% ownership, and then you dilute to an extent without breaking through. You're a minority shareholder in your own company. But if you set up a fund, you sell NAV and units. Sure. You don't have to worry about the percentage you're giving away. You initially do that to build a valuation, to build a company. You show scalability, and then you reach out to institutional investors who have a playbook.
Pensions and,
But we are not quite there yet with pensions. That will be next phase, which is our 500 million fund, which we are launching 2028, because we want to build a hydrogen-powered whiskey distillery with a 200-bedroom hotel in
Fantastic.
Edinburgh.
Fantastic. 200-bedroom hotel?
Yeah, a luxury hotel.
Oh, love that. Where?
In Edinburgh, Midlothian.
Do you know, I think you're going to do that as well.
Of course you will, Sudhi. Of course you
will. I will.
You are absolutely.
It'll take time, but I will.
You so will.
I've got nothing better to do.
Midlothian, where in Midlothian? So
there is an area called Roslyn.
Oh, yes, of course.
It's where the Roslyn Chapel sits. Yeah. So within the vicinity of Roslyn, wherever I can find the ideal land. We have a few land we have identified. It's about buying it in the right price and then turning it around and plugging a brand to run the hotel, because I'm not a hotelier. I don't know how to run a hotel. I don't understand the ergonomics of running a hotel.
You know how to wash pots.
I do. I can do that job if I need, or therapy some days.
I'm sure you can figure it out.
Well, we have been speaking to some of the biggest brands in the world, and they are quite keen to collaborate with us. So they will take an operating ownership, where they will take a 99-year lease and they will come and slap their brand onto our hotel.
Can I ask you something just about that hotel quickly? The infrastructure around, so when you're buying freehold land, because obviously it has to be freehold, you do look at transport links. Does Roslyn have suitable airports? Okay.
Yes.
Helicopter
International
pads.
Airports, helicopter pads, everything.
Yeah, helicopter, yeah.
It's the biggest golfing ground in the world.
Perfect.
So everybody, all the billionaires of the world fly in. So they have the infrastructure. They don't have a luxury hotel that I like.
Oh,
I like the
now.
Hotels like Amman. I like the hotels
Fairmont. Well.
Yeah. That's the gap in the market. Yes. 3 million people come to Edinburgh every year, and beautiful hotels, but they don't give the service that the people they demand at that scale and at that level.
Yeah, yeah.
That's where I'm trying to fill the gap.
Do you know what the theme is yet for your hotel?
Yes.
Okay, what is it?
It's very much Scottish, but within a touch of the royalty from India.
Please, yes.
I knew you were going to say
that.
The Raj.
For me, an Ayurvedic wellness center is a must-have.
Yes,
so we are working with one of the biggest Ayurvedic wellness center groups to either lease out a place in the grand scheme of things, or the hotel partner we will pick, they must have I would love to have Aman, if Aman agrees, if they are listening. If not, I have a few players on the table who are very keen to work with us, and I'll pick one.
Fantastic. It's something that you said about how important it is to have amazing people around you. You want to be employing people that want a career, not a job.
Yes. Hunger, I'll put it bluntly. Hunger. If you don't have hunger, I don't work with people that are not hungry, who are looking for, you know, a sane life. I have no balance in my life. I don't sleep. I don't eat. I'm on the go. I want people like that.
You were obviously eating at some point.
Yeah, I mean, I've cut down a lot of weight, so I'm eating one meal a day. But I mean, I'm on the go. Before even coming here, I had a meeting in the morning.
How many hours are you working a day?
Depends. Sometimes I start at 7 and I wrap up at 12. Sometimes I wrap up at 3. Last night I wrapped up my meetings around 10, but I went to bed at 3. I had to create.
What are you doing between 10 and 3?
I was working on finances. I was working on cash flow forecastings. I was working on, every investor has a very specific need. Some are looking for growth, some are looking for stability. So you cannot serve every dish on a plate. And sometimes you have to tweak your business model to accommodate the investor.
The investors are very demanding. How are you actually meeting that service need for them?
I'm currently working with billionaires.
What's your reporting process?
Well, we do quarterly reporting.
Okay.
We have annual audited reports that goes out to them. But
they will require individual.
I fly out to them.
Yeah, of course.
I was in India just now 3 weeks ago, and I did a board meeting in a wedding because one of the investors' daughters were getting married and three of the investors were going to be in the same wedding. I flew one of the investors into that wedding as an, you know, an plus one, and we did a board meeting there.
India is clearly going to be a massive market for you because it's a market you know.
Yeah.
What's the difference in doing business with India, Indians, rather than people in the UK? Is there a massive difference, disparity?
Yes, disparity does exist, but that's an opportunity because when people don't have anything, they are aspirational to build something. So they are potential clients. We're in the West, we are already a mature economy. People have already earned a certain style of living. They have experienced life in a certain way. So we have a mature infrastructure. All we do is improve the infrastructure we have. India is building that infrastructure. So housing is big in India. If you want to be a developer, be in India because, you know, 2 billion people on the planet are from India.
It's a growing market. Do you think you, being Indian, open a lot of doors for you business-wise over there?
Absolutely, because culturally I'm relevant to them.
Do you have a figure in your head as an exit?
I'm never going to exit. Why should I exit?
Yeah, why would you?
Isn't it amazing that we have so many entrepreneurs come on here and say the same thing?
No, I can understand it. Because what are you going to do? You'll just have to build.
If I give you 100 million tomorrow, you don't take it?
I will not. I have been offered 50 million for the brand. I've rejected
already?
It. Yeah. I have received one exit offer from one of the biggest players in the world. I very politely declined because I feel I take that money maybe for first 1 year. I'll travel around the world. I'll eat the best food, go to the best sushi bars. What will I do then?
Yeah.
I'll get depressed and I'll get lonely.
Yeah. As one entrepreneur said to us as exit, he'd had terrible seller's remorse. And he said, there's only so many boutique hotels and so many Amman hotels you can stay in.
Yeah.
In saying that, I think I could give it a good go.
Yes, but
you feel that way. I'm telling you, it's darker on the other side.
Mm-hmm, I agree.
And I know you're right. I know you're right. I jest, but I do know you're right.
Until you don't have money, you want money, and then you see some light of money, and you realize that I can only eat so much money, and I can only buy so many cars, and I can buy so many watches.
Is it not about money for you anymore?
I feel money is important. I would never say that money is not. It's a tool, and we must see this as a tool. The minute you snap out of the mindset of that I need money, if I lose everything today, I have no fear. And I mean that with the utmost honesty. I'll build it again.
Yeah, of course.
Do you think you could do business without any contracts? Because I think you're a man sitting in front of me.
I would not do that.
I'm just saying, I'm going to give you a compliment. I think you can do business on a handshake if you needed to.
Again, if I'm not building those relationships and I'm not honest in my dealings, why am I doing it? Because I can only have certain run rate with fraud. If I take 100 grand from you, the 100 grand is not enough. Until you experience 100 grand, you don't realize 100 grand is not enough.
No,
today, we burn 150 grand a month. There was a point, 100 grand was life to me.
Yeah.
When my uncle wrote me a 100,000 pound check, I thought I've made it in life until that disappeared. And I was dead broke again. And today, we burn 150 grand a month on salaries and infrastructural costs and stocks and everything, and which is only going to increase, you know, year on year. So suddenly money has lost value.
It is so utterly important when you are so immersed in building, expanding and scaling, and it does possess you and it does consume you. How are you keeping yourself on the same accelerated growth as what's required to reach the heights you're going to get to?
It's tough.
What's your plan?
Well, the plan is sales fixes all. You know, Mark Cuban said it in a podcast. If your sales are coming through, nothing can stop you.
Absolutely.
If your sales are not coming through, the pit hole of burning money will never end. So we focus on driving recurring revenue. Even the fund that we are building, we are focused on AUM, which is asset under management, and ARR, annual recurring revenue. If the revenues are there, the fund NAV is going to grow and people are going to pool more money.
Live and die by the NAV.
And by the and the more assets we buy, the AUM is there. At the end of the day, the value is for the land. He who owns the land is a landlord, and landlord never fails.
How are you keeping tabs on you?
I don't keep money. I'm absolutely cash free. So if I need money, I speak to Selena and she gives me a pocket allowance to live my life.
Traveling. Really?
Yeah. I don't control money.
What about your wife?
Well, my wife, she's an entrepreneur herself. She makes her own money. So we don't muddle our waters with money. I do my duties that I have to as a father and as a husband. Other than that, we are people of very minimum means. We don't have a flashy lifestyle. We don't go out. We indulge whenever we want to. But again, that's that we do it for the sake of, you know, we should not feel that we are depriving us of the excitements of life. But having said that, we don't have crazy indulgences. We don't go to casinos.
I'd believe that if I wasn't looking at my absolute dream watch on your wrist.
So this is an investment for me. I don't buy jewelry. I don't buy houses. I don't have 15 houses sitting there, you know, generating rent. What am I leaving behind for my kids that is sentimental? Mm. I can give them all the money in the world. I know they are going to be trust fund babies. They are going to be spoiled. They are not going to go through the hardships I have gone through.
Does that worry you?
It does. But then,
I understand, but
they never chose that life. I am giving that life to them, and they like it or they don't. They are a product of a rich father, an even wealthier father in the future. That's nothing I can protect them from. They have to learn through their struggles. But sentimental value is materialistic things I can leave behind. So rather than leaving them a cash pile, I would give them a watch where they will wear it and they will have something that connects to me.
Yeah, I get that.
And also it's an investment. If I can't make my payroll, I can sell it and I can pay the month's rent.
Imagine you're on death row.
No, that's my one. I love that one. We have fights over the last question.
Well, I was the one that did the death row last time, didn't I?
No, yes.
So we're having a little bit of domestic.
That's good.
It's all good this show.
It's a healthy partnership.
Go on, then.
Go on, no.
I was going to say, you happen to be on death row. And the reason you're on death row is because, actually, you've asked so many people, all these people that you wanted to invest in the company, and they've all said no, so you've shot them all. You're on death row. What's your last meal?
I would like to choose two rather than one because I can. I'm on a death row. I can ask for anything. I would like for a medium rare steak with creamy spinach. And I would like yellowtail tuna. If I were in a death row, if I had shot people, which I'm not going to do because I need to run a company and I don't have a gun.
Good point. Good point. But I just want to thank Bold Minds Media,
yes.
David Brooks.
Amazing guy.
For amazing man.
Never answers my call, but good guy.
I'm only joking.
For introducing us to you. Thank you, David. Thank you.
Thank you, David.
He never answers your call. That's because you're always late with the payments, probably.
On time. I make him first before I pay even myself, which I don't.
Just before we go, I'd just like to say we have a little saying at the end of our podcast. The one thing that we have learnt, well, lots of things we have learnt from talking to so many incredibly inspirational people like yourself. And that is, if you believe enough in what you're doing,
yeah,
you can do anything.
Yes, that's so true. I am a testament of it.
Nish Sharma, you've been a top, top guest. Thank you for coming on Entrepreneurs Worldwide.
Thank you. No, you guys have been very kind. Thank you so much for the opportunity. I thoroughly enjoyed lovely trip drinks that you have on the table. And thank you. You guys have been wonderful. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Can you do us a favor? Can you hit that follow and subscribe button? You can find us anywhere where you get your podcasts on Entrepreneurs Worldwide. And there'll be a new episode every Wednesday at 5 a.m.